indeed not only an honour, but also it's a subject that I'm pretty close to. I've done a couple of talks like this before, and apologies for some people who might have seen some of this, but there are some additional informations, and I haven't changed the story, but it's just sometimes a slightly different impact or different issue. One of the things is there's not only lessons learned, but also what value do you price on energy security, and I guess that's the real issue about all of this sort of stuff. Everyone saw this picture. This is, I'll go through reasonably fast and leave the discussion on where we go from here sort of towards the end, obviously. But just for people who don't know, you've obviously got two pipelines that come down. There's the issue associated with the main DBNGP, which we've been playing with, I guess, for the last 20 years. It sort of started with the old Sequa days, and the pipeline operator and the power system operator were together in one building going back until 1995 and then split up. But I have a very close relationship with Mark Cooper in a professional sense, and we talk to each other quite regularly and do sometimes get ourselves into slight difficulties with the way the power system goes. You've got this in that flyer. This is where the Varanus issue occurred. It occurred on June the 3rd, and really the biggest issue was that there was about 30% of the gas was stopped, and a whole pile went south, which came our way, and a fair amount of gas. And I've left this sort of general because I don't want to put down specific details, but a lot went north and east. And therein lies one of the issues for us, that once you started this occurring, you started losing a fair amount of supply or gas to not only the Vir generators, but Alinta and Eastern Goldfields gas turbines and the other Swiss generators and non-Swiss generators, especially in the Goldfields. There are a number of gas customers with curtailed, as we know. That sort of happened pretty quickly. And there were some electricity customers curtailed that occurred generally pretty fast, and that was sort of more on other issues rather than security. One of the problems, of course, this occurred in the middle of winter, as winter's basically starting. We had some plant outages, generally coal plant, which means you use a little bit more gas, but not a lot more. We sort of planned this on a criteria base. But unfortunately, Collie had tripped off and was out sort of 3 or 5 days earlier than this, and that 340 megawatts of coal was being replaced by alternative fuels. And that was one of the things that sort of caused this a bit more of an issue. We're also moving into winter, which means you're going to start using more gas and more electricity just because people get cold. That's life. And we know through experience, and Matt mentioned that we had had an issue early in January this year, but having been in this business for over 15, 20 years, we've had these sort of problems the last 20 years, and only one or two or three get out into the public domain. There's always lots of little things that occur on pipelines or producers that we've got to start doing a bit of manoeuvring, and generally it's sort of behind the scenes and no one actually gets to hear about it. And then occasionally you get one of these big events that come right out into the woodwork, and all of a sudden it's a... And we know it becomes a distillate issue very fast from a generation and power system point of view. That's a typical load pattern, coal at the bottom, gas in the... And then I've just thrown in a nice curve just to show you that wind farms do help fairly good. Occasionally they're not often helping in the night time, but you get a little bit of wind. So they're the three main fuels that this power system uses. But as soon as we got into the gas crisis, we started burning lots of oil. And it wasn't just oil for the peaks, it was oil over 24 hours. And that was sort of one of the differences this time, that often you just have... People tend to think oil's burnt for the two or three... You know, the two peaks of the day or in a summer pattern over the... Over the hot part of the day, but we're actually burning a little bit of oil during the night as well, just to conserve the remaining gas that we knew we needed for the next day. One of the issues with this state, we have a fair amount of coal, about 15, 16, 1700 megawatts, depending how you want to count certain mills and things. We have a lot of gas plant, nearly 2600 megawatts. Wind farms around 190 at the moment, which is gradually moving up. And oil or dual firing or whatever, up to around 1,500, 1,600. So you can move a fair bit across. And I've got a couple of graphs at the end that's worth having a look at. The short-term action was obviously maximised coal, nothing sort of unusual, stabilised gas use. We have this wonderful saying that if the gas pipeline dies, the electricity power system dies, so we stay very close to the pipeline operator to make sure that that major infrastructure stays as healthy as we can make it as well. And we also wanted to start monitoring the gas use and obviously bring Collie back as fast as possible. So that goes without saying, and I'm sure Shirley might touch a little bit more on that. Our role in the system management side of things was to really start to determine how long we could run in this mode, knowing we were going to start burning a lot of distillate. We immediately called an emergency operating state in the wholesale electricity market, and that gave us the ability to start dispatching generation around security issues rather than purely finance. In other words, we started wanting to look after the distillate burns in different power stations because we couldn't really afford to start running out. There was a gas crisis coordination committee formed pretty quickly. The Premier called a group of gentlemen, ladies on the Sunday, and we all got together and we started working out a few of the things. And that was quite a good issue because there are people that sort of understood some of the operational and technical side. There was obviously a fair amount of public and politics, and so that was actually good to get a lot of people on the same platform and getting people to understand that it's not a simple A and B issue. It's really, it's a whole set of interdependencies, and trying to get that organised was quite good. And obviously there was this discussion even then about resurrecting Ujeri Bin. Once again, I'll let Shirley miss you. The issue with the distillate is there's limited storage at power stations. Each power station has a certain amount of storage. Some of the older stations have more storage. Some of the new power stations and gas turbines, which are dual-fired, can only have sort of 10, 12, 14 hours. And we really couldn't afford to start running out at any single power station, otherwise we get into massive power rationing, which is sort of an added compounding problem to this gas, and that's what we're trying to avoid from our point of view. Just to give you an idea, the gas turbines at Kemerton, that are around 320 megawatts, about 160 megawatts each, use 80,000 litres per hour, and those double tanker road tankers deliver 70,000. So once you start running those, you can't even keep the deliveries up to it, even if you could get one of those tankers in every hour, and there just aren't that many tanker drivers and tanks, etc. So we have to be very careful on how we use this. And it's not just Kemerton, it's Wagerups and all the places around. There's around 3 to 4 million extra litres of fuel that was starting to go into the system that normally doesn't happen. And there was lots of pressure on storage, delivery and refineries on how we're going to do this and making sure the coordination. And it's not just a government coordination, because there are a lot of private industry that was trying to get distillate as well. There's people in the mines, there's people down this end of town, there was power stations, there was refineries, and there was even the smaller customers who were trying to get distillate as well. So there was a fair amount of difficulty, I guess, and also trying to make decisions on how that occurs. This is a graph, reasonably busy, but it shows you how many hours at each station, and this is Wagerup and then West Kalgoorlie's, Pinjar, and so these are the sites that have certain hour running hours, and you can see as we started moving through June, some of these sites are getting down, and this site at Wagerup got down to 2 hours of running, and everyone started getting a bit concerned about that, but we knew we weren't going to run it for two or three more days because we came to the weekend and there was lots of tankers coming in during that, so that started moving up pretty fast. But that was the sort of balancing act we were trying to make sure we do, and we've sort of done this before, but we haven't actually do it for such a long period. Often the issues we've had before have been short term, 1 or 2 or 3 days. We knew this was going to be quite a long period, so we had to start setting up different systems to try and look after this. We went into the public information, and Alinta as well went into TV and print and started seeing high gas prices in the commercial world, not so much at the household level. But we were concerned that if people started turning off, moving into winter, started turning off gas heaters and putting electricity heaters on or reverse cycle air conditioning, we would actually get into a distillate issue as well. So we got into really an energy conservation sort of mode. And we're also thinking, being reasonably pessimist, thinking of the next issue, because the next issue will always occur, no matter what you say. You get the normal public, I reckon this was the best one, Coles, no tap beer and dark shops. I'm thinking the no tap beer was a real big issue because they were running short of CO2 at the time, so that was another. We had a general reduction. There was some force, but there was some quite a good bit of voluntary reduction at the beginning. People start losing a bit of interest after a while, being asked to conserve, and but we had a reasonable reduction over that period, so that sort of helped. And just to sort of emphasise, when wind was blowing really well during this period, it saved 10 to 15 terajoules of gas, which is, depending on what price you want to call, and I won't sort of mention what prices were there, but that's a lot of dollars that the wind farms really help. But, of course, when it didn't work, well, you got no wind this day, and all of a sudden you're burning lots of distillate. So that's sort of the impact that wind can have on this, and a positive impact on the good days. Just the last slide, or the last couple of slides, is that that's the amount of coal we've got in this system. I mentioned about 15-16. Well, this year we're actually counting coal's coming in and out, some's being retired via the VIRS system and some's coming in via the Blue Waters, but we tend to run around that 1,800 or 1,900. But the amount of gas that's coming in is quite enormous, and that's our dual firing. So what that really means is we're now becoming more and more dependent on gas over the last 10 years. So the last 10 years we've moved from a 54%, and I'll just show you the next slide because that gives it a percentage, we've moved from over 50% coal down to around 35% coal, and we've moved gas from 20-odd percent to nearly 30 or nearly 40%. But the amount of dual firing, which are those purples, we've only got about 1,000 megawatts of dual firing. So if you actually had a major gas, and to be fair, the Varanus crisis, in my perspective, wasn't major from an electricity point of view. There was a lot of manoeuvrings, but it wasn't as bad as we've seen in some other parts. The difficulty with this one, it lasted a lot longer than we had anticipated. But you can see if you lost 2,000 megawatts because they can only burn gas and nothing but, the power system would be in enormous trouble. And I think that's one of the debates we can have later on. One of the things is we mentioned earlier on this year about January the 2nd and 3rd. This is the oil that was actually burnt on those days. We had to come down. There was a lot bigger gas issue from an electricity point of view in this case. And this occurred, I think it was on a Wednesday or a Tuesday, I can't remember now. And it lasted around 2 days. And really, we were coming into a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If they had not have got that Dom gas back, and there were massive reductions come the Monday, because by that stage the pipe was probably in a real lot of trouble, we would have been into massive power rationing. And I mean very big power rationing, because we would have lost nearly 1,500 megawatts of... And we're coming into a hot spell early January, and even though the schools are not there and people are on holidays, etc., would have been to severe power rationing if that event had lasted longer than the 50 hours. And I think that's sort of one of the security issues we've got to start seriously thinking about. And that lasted only for 2 days, and then, as you can see, it quietly got back, and we didn't burn any distillate for quite a while after that. One of the issues we have in this system is power system security. And there's a number of ways you can look at this. There's fuel diversification. We have coal, gas, fair amount of distillate, wind starting to pick up, how much wind we're getting. There's solar, nuclear, and a whole pile of others. I put the word nuclear there because everyone talks about it. The biggest issue with nuclear is that the units to make them viable are very, very large, often 1,000 megawatts and more, and our power system only has about 1,400 megawatts overnight. You can't really put a nuclear on a very small, isolated power system like this for many, many years. And I mean many, many years, not like 5 or 10 or 15, I'm talking 20 and 30. And also you would need significantly large overnight loads to come into this state to actually allow a nuclear power station to survive in this state. So there are people who sort of talk about nuclear but really don't quite understand the technicalities. And at the end of the day, this is purely physics. It's nothing more than physics. If you've only got a certain amount of load, you have to manoeuvre things around, because electricity is an instantaneous product. The moment you turn a switch on, there's some guy in a power station tweaking the governor on a generator, and it follows every move the community makes. So that's sort of an issue that we have to really look at. The issue with storage, and I know this is a classic, do you duplicate pipelines? And Mark and I have talked about this before. What sort of gas duplication, if any, what sort of distillate sort of issues? And the issue with this event, really, from an electricity point of view, even though it cost a fair bit, distillate was sort of the saviour of the game. There are enough dual firing power stations around the place from an electricity point of view, and I think that's where we have to probably hone our thing in. And that's not quite as expensive, because gas storage facilities, which you're only going to use once every 10 or 15 years, is a very expensive option, and duplicating pipelines are... Well, as I said, Mark can talk about that. The impact of renewables is going to be quite interesting. The issue with, the big one that everyone's talking about, and I've been asked to do another talk in about 2 weeks' time or 3 weeks' time, that Matt seems to me got me on a leash at the moment, that from a point of view of the impact of renewables and the 20% MRETs and all those sorts of things, and at the moment most people think wind is the saviour. Wind is really good when you first start. Wind is great for the first 5, 10, 15% of a power system. Once you start moving further penetration of wind into a power system, it then becomes pretty difficult to start operating, and it gets to a level that eventually you just can't put any more wind on. No matter what you do, you just can't move. Otherwise, you're turning major industries off to allow the wind to do what it needs to do. And I guess the real issue I like to see is solar PV cells and those sort of things, because PV cells generally work in the day and don't work at night. Excellent. It's no more difficult than that. And solar actually has some form of storage if we're lucky, if we can actually design those sort of things. And the reason I put electric cars there, even though that's not a generating source, it can be used as a generating source. And I believe in probably 15, 20 years' time, once you get enough electric cars in power systems and you get smart grids and you control the electric cars when they charge up and when they don't, you can actually use them to regenerate into a power system to help frequency control and voltage control and those sorts of things. I'm getting the word. Just one quick thing on wind. This is the penetration of wind in Europe. over the last 20 years, 1990 to 2006, 16 years, and it's up to around 50,000 gigawatts, 50,000 megawatts, quite high. You've got to remember the European system's around, depending what part of Europe you call, because they keep moving left or to the right, as we know, but it's around 500,000 megawatts. So this level isn't too difficult. The issue with this is back in late 2006, the whole European power system, which is all interconnected, collapsed into three modes. 15 million customers were turned off. They had a major issue trying to get the whole power system back together again, and one of the biggest components of why that occurred was the fact that wind farmers were sort of operating on their own thing, and they were actually making it a lot more difficult to get the power system back. And this is now the prediction of where wind's going, and they're sitting down at 50,000 here. They are talking about putting 300,000 megawatts of wind in by about 2030, 2040. Now, they're going to have to actually build a massive super grid around Europe. And we know what it's like trying to bid transmission lines, et cetera. It's almost impossible. But trying to... And that, this is where the only way they can see how they're going to actually get their emissions trading and emissions greenhouse gas effects down. And this is turning into a very big issue with operating how you operate power systems. Because you do get the issue that if you start putting more and more of these different technologies, power system security can be compromised. And if people are willing to accept that, then that's fine. But as long as they don't sort of come back and say, we just put A, B, C and the power system gets into trouble maybe once every 2 years or so, as long as they understand those sort of things. And I think that's why it's very important that people like me who play with power systems get to talk to people, because we have these many various ideas, and that's why the debate and the education and the knowledge needs to get out there. Thank you very much. We'll leave it there. Thank you.